Welcome to the Women and Wealth Podcast with Esther Szabo. Esther is a respected leader in the field of personal financial advice with over 25 years of experience. After going through her own significant and challenging life-changing events, she overcame fear and self-doubt to launch her own successful advisory firm. Now Esther is ready to share her practical and personal experiences to help other women clear their hurdles and brave life's transitions. In this way, she inspires women to lead fulfilling and confident lives.
Hello and welcome to Women in Wealth with Esther Szabo from Gates Pass Advisors. Today we have part one of a two-part podcast, so you'll have to tune in for the next one because Esther has a great guest in studio, and that is Irina Anisimova. And she is a CPA, and she's got a lot of other accreditations I don't even know, so we're going to get into that in a minute. She has over 10 years of experience in litigation support, forensic accounting, which is mainly family law litigation, and business valuation. She has over 20 years of accounting and management consulting experience in the U.S. and abroad. Esther, good morning. How are you?
Hi, Eric. It's so good to talk to you again. I've missed speaking with you, and I'm doing wonderful today. Thank you.
And how's your finger?
My finger? What do you mean? Oh, that heavy fourth finger on the left side that's got this extra ring on it now.
Yes, congratulations.
not only the finger, but my whole self is very, very happy. Thank you.
Oh, that's fantastic. And can you please introduce us to your guest and also please clue us in? She is a CFF and an ABV, and I have no idea what those mean.
I'm so happy that Irina is with us today. She has a wealth of information. This podcast is specific primarily to those who are considering divorce. So she has a lot of information to share with us. She is a forensic accountant. We'll be talking more about what that is. And one of those certifications we'll start with first. The other one we'll weave in a little bit later today. But she is certified in financial forensics. And I will ask her, because when I hear about financial forensics, I think of the TV show about forensics, and I think about detective work, and I see shadowy rooms and all this exciting stuff. So, Irina, I'm so glad that you're here. Can you tell us more about your certification in financial forensics and what you do as a forensic accountant?
Well, my work is much less glamorous and difficult and dangerous, as you describe. No waiting in the car in the middle of the dark night or suddenly jumping out of a gutter. Forensic means for litigation, for the legal process. That's why we have so many forensics. We have experts who do accounting work like I do, those who investigate crime scenes, and that's where you get all these lovely stuff about blood spatters and where the dead body was found.
Exactly.
You have forensic psychologists and psychiatrists. You have lots of forensic scientists. My area is not exciting at all in terms of going outside and doing some sleuthing and running around with a gun. I mostly work with the documents. I mostly work with the divorce process. And I provide all kinds of calculations and business valuations that are necessary for divorce process.
And when you say you work with the documents, can you tell us more about what documents you work with? Or we can get into that in a little bit. Which would you prefer?
Well, generally, those are documents related to the financial affairs of the couple. So there will be tax returns, there will be bank and credit card statements, and yes, I can read a bank or a credit card statement as if it were your diary. So this is a wealth of information. There can be all other things like escrow statements for the purchases of real estate, and so on. Everything related to financial transactions.
So you really get into a lot of the nuts and bolts. And the purpose of it often is to help determine support for one party or the other, and for child support and for equitable division of assets. Is that fair to say?
Yes, these are two main goals. that involve different kinds of work depending on the couple's financial situation. Mm-hmm.
And what brought you into this area of being a forensic accountant?
It happened kind of by chance. I did every kind of accounting work imaginable. I did audits, I did bookkeeping, I did reviews, I did tax preparation for a long time. And one of my tax clients had an embezzlement discovered in his company. Mm-hmm. So they called me in because, after all, I'm a CPA, I should be able to investigate some fraudulent transactions. I did the investigation, I testified in court. And I liked it, so I continued.
And isn't, I mean, most people go, oh, testifying in court, that sounds really scary and intimidating. Is that what it's like?
Not to me. I have no problem with public speaking. And while testifying, you're essentially telling the judge what you did, how you arrived at your conclusion, and basically support whatever opinion you have formed. Mm-hmm. I don't find it difficult at all.
Really? So I'm thinking of, I'm going back to television with that. But so as we talk more about divorce, I know you feel really strongly that when we're focusing on women in this podcast, Women in My Practice, Women and Wealth, can you tell us more about why you believe women really need to be more educated themselves about the process of divorce?
Well, for the simple reason that women still generally suffer from divorce financially more than men. Women earn less money. Women tend to take time off work to raise the family. Women are the main primary caretakers of the children. And therefore, that inhibits their ability to earn as much as their husbands do. And there is still a well-established tradition that makes even successful women to delegate family finances and management of family money to the husband. So as the more disadvantaged or the less advantaged party in the divorce process, women have to put more thought into the preparation for the process.
So what you're saying is just how we are sociologically is that women typically take breaks out of the workforce, earn less when they are in the workforce, have more primary care responsibilities. Typically, I know there are exceptions, but typically are responsible for the children and child care. And through all of this, still tend to delegate more to, if it's a male-female couple, to the man of the household. So even with that, he has more power and control. And that's why you feel strongly that women need to be educated about, should they become divorced, what is that process? Did I get that?
You did, except for, I would put it more generally, mm-hmm. Whoever is in at a disadvantage when the thought of the divorce visits this person should take some time and invest some effort into considering the option and into the preparation for this process. Of course, there are situations when you are presented with a divorce petition out of the blue. At least you haven't been expecting anything like that. But even in that situation, there is an option of taking a deep breath, stepping a step away from the turmoil of getting the paper to sign, and doing some planning, which is essential for a good outcome from a situation where there is no good outcome.
Mm-hmm, right. And we talk a lot in the financial transitionist work that I do, that there are stages of transition. And so often there can be this feeling of rush to resolution that one doesn't allow themselves to gather the needed information. And with the four stages, there's an anticipation stage that can happen with divorce, where one is thinking this may be happening, or they know, as you say, they've been served with paperwork, so they know for sure it's happening, but they're not yet divorced. And what I appreciate about what you're saying is, and I strongly believe this too, with finance and decisions, is to get, allow oneself the ability, even though it's so unpleasant in a lot of ways. And it's, in a way, it's kind of hard to talk about this as technically as we're talking about it, because it's not so much about the pain of just having to deal with this today, but what are the practical implications to consider? And I appreciate that you're talking about this from the standpoint of how important it is to gather information. Where would you suggest that a woman start with this information gathering process?
Well, the first step definitely should be seeing an attorney, a family law attorney, or maybe several. Because being self-represented or relying on the internet or, God forbid, on the advice of loving family and friends can be very disastrous in divorce. This is an emotional process and it is also a legal process. And before you make any step, you need to have some understanding of what the consequences of this step might be. And you need a trusted attorney on your side to represent you, to give you an advice on what to do and what not to do, and to help you together the rest of the information.
How do you recommend that people look for the attorney that can help them?
Well, first of all attorneys are online. This is where internet is helpful. You can look up attorneys in your area because you want to be able to be close enough to a qualified person to help you. You need to talk to several of them because you need to be on the same page with this person. You have to have a trusting relationship with your attorney. It's not like you can hire a plumber. The plumber comes in, repairs the leak, and goes out. You will be working with this person for a period of time. And, of course, you need to get an advice about your specific situation. I would start with the companies or professionals who offer either a free consultation or who would consult with you for an hourly fee. And go from there. Because, of course, if you are going to hire a big firm, that will probably cost you more money. But on the other hand, if your divorce is complicated and you need more resources, then it's the right place to be. A solo practitioner may cost you less, but you have to be absolutely certain that you do not need as many resources for your divorce process. And the resource issue comes from the complexity of financial issues and, of course, the complexity of custody issues.
So I think of a couple things here, which as one of them is what a bit of, we talked earlier that a woman may not know exactly how complex their situation is. When do you come into the picture?
Well, I usually come into the picture when there is some complexity in the setup of the financial situation. For example, if the earner of the family, usually it's a man still, has income that comes from multiple sources. For example, we all know that a W-2 income is just simple money that you get, but there may be all sorts of variations in the W-2s of people who have a base salary, a commission, stock options or restricted stock units. They may have deferred compensation arrangements other than 401k. They may have all sorts of incentive plans, bonuses, you name it. The higher you get up the ladder in business hierarchy, the more complicated salary structure becomes for those managers, and it's not very easy to figure out what actually is income and what is not quite income. Another thing is, of course, if you have assets that were acquired or contain some separate property that one of the parties inherited during marriage or had before the marriage. Because in this case, this separate property is not part of the community estate and you have to carve it out before the property division.
So I'm going to pause there because those are two very critical areas, of course. And so let's take the first one first about the variable income. Would you say if the woman isn't sure how, let's say, it can be a same-sex partnership also as well, either way, isn't sure how her spouse is compensated, would the tax return be the go-to place?
Not necessarily. The place to see the layers of compensation is actually a pay stub. But usually, the partners in the couple know about different layers of compensation. I mean, it's common knowledge that if someone gets commissions or bonuses, they will talk about it with the spouse. If someone gets restricted stock units, of course, the spouse will know. He or she may not know the exact amount, but this is already a complication that needs to be discussed with an attorney because, of course, once you hire an attorney and start a divorce process, this is information that can be fairly easily obtained.
Yes, and I'm even going to backtrack a little bit more because you mentioned starting the divorce process, tying it to our earlier conversation about when would you suggest somebody, what were your thoughts about starting the divorce process?
Well, this is a very difficult decision. This is a decision that will change your life in the most drastic ways for at least a period of time, for months, not for weeks. And then you will have to live with the consequences of this action. Therefore, it is worth thinking about it clearly and hard to determine what you want to accomplish, how you want to accomplish it, and formulate some goals for yourself. And only after careful consideration, go ahead with the process. We're now talking about the situation where someone is considering divorce, but hasn't been put in front of a divorce petition filed by the other spouse.
Right. That's right. So when they've discovered something or come to the conclusion that I don't know if this marriage is the right thing for me, and I need to really consider what my options are, what you're talking about and what we were talking about earlier is giving time to really do some research as well as some, it's like as you talked about, this is an emotional decision as well as a legal decision. And sometimes with these financial decisions, they can be driven too much by the emotions to where that it's very hard to consider, as you say, and very rightly so, okay, what are the implications for me of this 5 years down the road, 10 years down the road? And what you're recommending is that women really take time to consider this. So then as we go forward, I know you have some thoughts about women representing themselves rather than using an attorney. You're suggesting they go to an attorney. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yes, of course. Being self-represented is a good decision only if both parties have nothing to argue about. They have no property to divide. They have no argument about custody of the children, and they have approximately the same level of income. Mm-hmm. Then, of course, you can sit down at the kitchen table and file the papers. There is nothing to struggle about. Mm-hmm. The problem arises when there is a disparity in income, when there are assets to divide that may or may not contain separate property. And of course, you need help to resolve custody issues. Nice. That's why I'm saying you have to think about it because the divorce will not make you richer. It will make you poorer. Mm-hmm. Under no circumstances, the divorce will preserve all the assets that the parties have before starting the process. Part of it will be spent on attorneys, on fighting in court. And once the assets are divided, there is an issue of how are they going to be used and managed. Because, for example, if you live in a nice house and during the divorce the house is sold and both you and your ex-husband get a certain amount of money, what are you going to do with it? Are you going to live in the same area? Are you going to live someplace else, move out of Bay Area to Idaho, for example? What about the children? Do you want to keep the children in the same school they are now? So there are lots of difficult questions need very careful consideration.
Yeah, and it's also painful often. And so again, when do you come into the process? Do people reach out to you directly and say, Arena, help me figure out where all this money is?
Well, when they do it directly, I usually talk to them and then direct them to an attorney. I, of course, can recommend several attorneys that I may that I have worked with and that may be helpful to those clients, because I do not work with self-represented clients. Mm-hmm. Usually, the clients are referred to me by attorneys when there is an understanding that there needs to be some accounting done for the case, like there needs to be a determination of what kind of income is available for support. If there is separate property involved, then this separate property needs to be traced. And when this is an issue, so they call for a forensic accountant. And of course, if there is a business involved.
So we're going to talk about the business in part two, but let's talk a little bit about the separate account issue, because you've mentioned that, a separate property, issue, and you've mentioned that a couple times. California is a community property estate, but what does that mean when you're saying trace separate property?
Well, community property estate means that from the date of marriage and during the marriage, whatever income is earned and whatever property is acquired, in general terms, it is community property. So by the end of a long-term marriage, in 10, 15, 20 years, there will be a substantial amount of community property, or at least we hope so. There will be a house that was purchased with community money, probably. There will be bank accounts, retirement accounts. But if it's, for example, a second marriage, or if the parties did have assets prior to the time they married, the parties have separate property which was acquired and accumulated prior to marriage. So what happens to that property is very important. For example, if you had a brokerage account with some money sitting there, and then when you got married, you used the money from this account to pay a down payment on the house, then you have a piece of separate property embedded in your house. So how do you divide the house? You cannot just sell it and split the proceeds 50-50, because the separate property has to be excluded from the property division.
So that's tricky, right? Because many people just go, well, I got this inheritance. Great. It helped us purchase this home. Wonderful. And hey, we both know that it was $50,000 I put in. Why can't I just get my $50,000 back?
Well, that is an interesting question. I've got the inheritance. We put it into the house. You have to understand that by the time you're divorcing, your spouse may or may not agree that he or she remembers that this $50,000 was put into the house. Because, you know, sudden lapses in memory do happen in such situations. It's a conflict. Everybody is fighting for him or herself. So if you are claiming that you inherited the money and you put it into the family residence, you have to prove it, because the burden of proof is on the person claiming separate property. So how do you do that?
Yeah, how do you do that, especially if it's 10, 15, 20 years ago?
Well, to begin with, I will ask for an escrow statement to confirm the amount of the down payment. And then I will try to look for the documents that would show that this down payment came indeed from the inheritance. You'll be asked to produce bank statements to show where the money came from. Sometimes it's easy to trace, and sometimes it isn't, because people's recollections about events that happened 10, 15 years ago tend to be rather vague. For example, the inheritance may have been received in February, and the house may have been purchased, say, in December of the same year. There is almost a year between the two events. Where did the inheritance go? How big was the inheritance? If it was just $50,000, it is possible that the whole inheritance was spent on living expenses, and then community money was used for the down payment, and that community money came from a different account.
Oh, that's so tricky.
It can be.
Yes. So then it's how, and so you go through and determine, okay, this $50,000, actually I found out, client, that it did come in, but look, it got spent on food, your current housing, utilities, all of that. And then when you went to purchase the house, you actually pulled that $50,000 from another account that was community property.
Yes, it is possible. Or even if the money came from the same account, but it was part of the bonus received by the other side shortly before you paid the down payment. It is still community property. So that's why tracing can become tricky. That's why I get hired to do this work, because it requires familiarity with all sorts of financial documents and the ability to sit down and trace it.
So I can imagine, especially in this area, I run into this with my work in financial planning and investment management selection, that there are engineers, there are smart people, and they say, well, I can handle document tracing. Why do you recommend that a forensic accountant do this work?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, you may want to try it. And of course, if the client wants to try, I usually give him or her a template and let him try. The problem here is the volume of the work, plus one needs to do the tracing in a way that it can be explained. One of the benefits of my work is that the end result will be a report that will have a bunch of schedules, sometimes 50 or 70 pages of different schedules, and nobody is going to look at the schedules. But on top of that, there is a narrative. There are two or three pages compressing the whole story of this tracing into an understandable and succinct account of what happened, how it happened, why this property is separate, and where it is located now. And of course, there is also the question of credibility, because when the work is done by a party and it's a big work, the credibility of this party becomes a question. And I am an expert, so I do not take sides. I just present the facts, and I can be called to the witness stand to testify about what I did, why I did it this way, and what are the results of my work.
So thank you so much, Irina. This has been so helpful, and we have more to talk about, don't we?
We do, and the pleasure was all mine. Thank you very much for inviting me.
You're welcome. In the next, we've learned so much today. If you think back just 30 minutes ago, if you'd never heard of forensic accounting and didn't have a picture of it, I would imagine you have a much clearer picture of not only what it is, but why it's so important and what how it can really benefit somebody going through the process of the difficult process of divorce. In our next podcast, we will be talking about the same issue, but what about having, it was touched on here, more complex income and also a business and how that goes to impacting decisions about spousal and child support. So again, thank you so much, Irina. I look forward to our next discussion.
Thank you.
This was fantastic. I know I learned a lot. I'm excited about the next podcast. And I hope the entire audience is as well. Speaking of audience, I want to thank you for listening to the Women in Wealth podcast with Esther Szabo. If you have not subscribed to the podcast yet, please click the subscribe now button below. This way, when Esther comes out with a new podcast, it'll show up directly on your listening device. This makes it much easier to share this podcast with your friends and family. Again, thanks so much for listening today. For everyone at Gates Pass Advisors, this is Eric Johnson reminding you to live your best day every day. And we'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Women and Wealth Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast so you receive notifications of new podcasts as they become available. Check out the website at www.gatespassadvisors.com for more information. This content is developed from sources believed to be providing accurate information. The information in this material is not intended as tax or legal advice. Please consult legal or tax professionals for specific information regarding your individual situation. The opinions expressed and material provided are for general information and should not be considered a solicitation for the purchase or sale of any security.